Maharaji said in the class yesterday that like we come here together to inspire each other. So during the class, if we are sleeping, we are preaching others to go to sleep. So same time you said again, when our mind wanders, we are creating a vibration so that others' mind also can wander. Can you just elaborate on it? Like, how is that? If my mind is wandering, how I'm encouraging others?
Whatever we do, whatever we say, whatever we think has a tremendous influence and impact on the entire creation. To be a servant of the Vaishnavas, first of all, means to be a proper example. An example which will assist them in their Krishna consciousness. To those who are our superiors in Krishna consciousness, our humility, our submissiveness, our willingness to want to hear from them, to follow their instructions, to do something for them, that is an example that assists them in their Krishna consciousness, assists them in their service to Guru and Krishna. For those Vaishnavas who are, as we say, on an equal level, who are our friends, by encouraging, by strictly chanting our rounds every day, by strictly taking part in all Krishna conscious activities, by revealing your mind, by hearing that person reveal his mind in confidence to you, in that way we are assisting them in their Krishna consciousness. And to those who are junior to us, by teaching them, by encouraging them, by being kind upon them. But we must know that there is gross and subtle devotional service. Even our subtle thoughts create a vibration in the atmosphere which will infect and influence everyone. If a person is very strong in Krishna consciousness, such a person is not affected by negative vibrations, either subtle or gross. If a person is not so strong in Krishna consciousness, those vibrations can have a dramatic effect in disturbing his faith and his spiritual life. So we must know that our service to the Vaishnava is to set a proper example on every level. On the level of the body, on the level of the mind, and on the level of the soul. Your mind is going to wander because that is the nature of a conditioned soul. But when we, with earnest determination, are constantly trying to bring our mind back to the holy name, bring our mind back to the subject within the Srimad Bhagavatam class, bring our mind back to our devotional service, that subtle austerity, first of all, it gives you a character beyond just your actions. It gives a deep dimension to your spirituality. And that character and that dimension, as well as the vibration of your own willingness to try to surrender, has a tremendous influence on other people's lives. We must know that the influences that are upon us are not only gross, not only what we see, what we hear, what we taste, what we feel, but our subtle mind is also being influenced. So if we really want to serve the Vaishnavas, we have to strive and struggle to be a servant through and through, from within and without, not just a make-show. It's showbottle to be sitting with your back erect, with your eyes open, looking at the speaker in Srimad Bhagavatam class if your mind is thinking of something far distant away. What depth is there in such a service to the Vaishnavas? The real depth is if you're really and truly attentive. Then what they see has substance, and it will really influence them. Whatever we do, we must do it with sincerity, not for show. And it is that sincerity which actually influences people's lives. That sincerity has to be manifested through everything we say, everything we do, but also everything we think. That sincerity is manifested in the thinking process by our earnest endeavor to keep Krishna in our hearts, to hear submissively, and to render service. We don't want to do it just so that we look like we're good devotees. We want to do it because we genuinely want to please our guru, we genuinely want to please Krishna, and we genuinely want to please and assist the Vaishnavas by that earnest, sincere endeavor to be Krishna conscious and follow the principles of Krishna consciousness. And everyone, without exception, can take that service and render that service to the Vaishnavas if we simply want to do it, if we have determination to do so. In 1972, in New Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada came. It's a wonderful story. He came for his Vyas Puja and for Janamastami. On the highest hill of the community at that time, they built not a pandal as we know it in India, but a pandal as we know it at New Vrindavan. It was made out of chopped down trees and like that. But he was sitting, and there were so many hundreds and hundreds of devotees and guests overlooking beautiful, beautiful valleys, mountains, forests. And he gave one lecture, and he was explaining the necessity of determination, earnest endeavor to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And he was speaking to everyone. And one devotee raised his hand at the end of the lecture and asked Srila Prabhupada, "What if we just do not have determination?" And Srila Prabhupada's reply was, "Then you are an animal. Human life means determination. You have free will as a human being, and the proper use of that free will is determination. To exercise your free will for the right purpose, at all costs, against all obstacles, that is determination. And it is that determination that differentiates human from the lower species of life. You can, if you desire. We cannot use the excuse that due to my past conditioning, I cannot. It's not because of your past conditioning. Because of your past conditioning, it may be more difficult. But it is because of your unwillingness to perform that sacrifice, which you can do, that is our greatest impediment in spiritual development. We want devotees with inner character, with interior spiritual substance. We don't want sahajya devotees. We don't want show bottle devotees. We don't want smarta devotees who put on a show for recognition, distinction, or other material benefits. We want devotees who are seriously, from the core of their hearts, striving and struggling to just be good servants, to just try to be a good example for other Vaishnavas to assist them in their Krishna consciousness. And that is what will make this yatra wonderful. That is what will make this movement wonderful. That is what will make our lives wonderful in the eyes of Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Nath Maharaj.
Maharaj, even in spite of all the sincerities, sometimes still the doubts come in the mind. Now, the doubt can be also because of lack of surrender. How do we differentiate that a doubt is genuine or it is because of the lack of surrender?
We require Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. In other words, if we are sincere, we will consult authority, not just our own feelings or our own sentiments or our own conditionings. We must understand what is what. What is Krishna saying in Gita? What are the previous acharyas saying? What are the true Vaishnavas saying? If we are sincere, we must find that out and put aside our own emotions and sentiments. And we have to deal with the doubt in that way. Of course, in Kali Yuga, we are practically born and raised to doubt in this society. For the doubting soul, there's neither happiness in this world or the next, Krishna says in Gita. And Srila Prabhupada told us that if you are 100% convinced about Krishna consciousness, you're a pure devotee. At the time when you're 100% convinced, that's when you're a completely purified soul. So naturally, there will be doubts in the conditioned state, in the neophyte stages of devotional service. But how important it is to be convinced. I remember one of my godbrothers were telling me that one time many of the leaders of our movement were sitting with Srila Prabhupada, and he looked at each one of them individually and personally, right in their eyes, and he asked one by one, "Are you convinced about Krishna consciousness?" And you see, Srila Prabhupada, due to that transparent purity of his nature, when he looked at you and he challenged you in this way, his glance and his wisdom was piercing to the core of your heart. You couldn't say something superficial. None of the devotees could say yes, because each of them had various levels of reservations or doubts. Srila Prabhupada said, if just the handful of disciples that I have right now were just convinced about Krishna consciousness, we could take over the world in 18 days. and make this world into Vaikuntha. So you may not have that conviction. You may have doubts. But if you're sincere, you will deal with your doubts. You will tolerate your doubts. You will have the right association. By keeping association with devotees who are strongly fixed in simple, pure devotional service, according to Guru Sadhu Shastra, it will protect us from giving in to those doubts. When those doubts separate us from the association of good devotees, or when those doubts separate us from strong sadhana, then those doubts will kill you spiritually and drive you away from your Krishna consciousness. But however many doubts may be in your mind, if you honestly and sincerely endeavor to maintain a proper relationship in the proper association of sincere devotees, and hope against hope, you maintain your strong sadhana of chanting 16 rounds, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, following the four regulative principles, then it is a matter of time till those doubts are dissipated. Krishna will remove them. But if we give in to Maya in the form of those demons of doubt, by not taking advantage of that association or that sadhana, then you will fall. You will fall from your spiritual principles. Without doubt, you will fall. That's something you should not doubt. So doubts are natural, but how to deal with them? We know what the path is. We know what type of Vaishnavas we should associate with. We know what our sadhana is. Don't give up. That is your determination. Nourish your intelligence by reading Prabhupada's books, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam classes, by coming to the Pravachans. It is very important. That will give us the intelligence by which we can continue on the path despite all obstacles. And the greatest obstacle is when the demons of doubt try to divert us from this path. Doubts are like storms. They come and they go. We just have to hold fast and not give up. And ultimately, only Krishna can remove those doubts from your heart. Not you. Arjuna had doubts. What is our level of realization compared to Arjuna's? Arjuna had many doubts. But he approached Krishna as Madhusudana. Madhusudana means the killer of demons. Because Arjuna knew that the demon of doubt was haunting him. And that demon was trying to degrade his life. Please, Krishna, you are the killer of demons. Kindly kill this demon of doubt. Arjuna, with his Gandiva bow, he was so powerful, he can destroy the whole Kuru army. He could even defeat Indra, the king of heaven. He could even defeat Shiva, the greatest of the devatas. This was the power of Arjuna's Gandiva bow and his military physical strength. But when it came to trying to kill the demon of doubt in his own heart, he realized that he was helpless. Only Krishna could save him. He turned to Krishna. He took shelter of Krishna as the killer of demons, Madhusudana. In the same way, how do we take shelter of Krishna? The same way Arjuna did, by hearing from him submissively, by hearing from his devotees submissively, and Whatever comes in our life, we must be strict. Our sadhana of chanting the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, and our association with sincere Vaishnavas. That is how we please Krishna and attract his mercy. Hari Nam and Sadhu Satsang. Don't give it up, and all your doubts will be removed. Does that answer your question?
Maharaj, I'd like to ask a question. When we are in these yatras, either into a holy dham or Rakuna, all of us, by the association, powerful association of the devotees and the very surcharged kirtans and the intense yearning of realized souls, we all of us make definitely remarkable progress internally. But my fear is that in the association of these devotees, yes, we go a step further towards Krishna. But I feel that when we go out back to our own jobs and our own situations, is the process of Krishna consciousness reversible? In the sense, the amount of purity, some purity which we have gained over here, is it likely to be again nullified by negative association or negative atmosphere outside? Because over the years, if you are regularly doing a sadhana, but at the same time you are getting contaminated also, then you might not land up making any tangible progress towards Krishna in some total. So is the process of Krishna consciousness really what you call as eternal, or is it sometimes reversible, that you counteract your progress by your own deeds?
Our spiritual progress can never be nullified. Neha bikrama nasosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatovar. That any endeavor in Krishna consciousness is permanent, it is eternal. But due to association with the three modes of material nature, especially the modes of passion and ignorance, our spiritual progress is temporarily covered. And if our association is too much with materialistic conditions and people who are perpetuating our doubts, it can completely obscure all of our spiritual progress. Therefore, if we're serious about advancing, we come to these yatras, we become spiritually surcharged. But please understand, it's not the yatra that's going to surcharge you. It's your willingness to properly take part in the yatra that's going to proportionately surcharge your heart with Krishna consciousness. In the yatra to Mayapur and in the yatra here, you find different devotees. Some of them say, this is wonderful. I'm making so much spiritual progress. Everything is just so perfect for my spiritual life. And other devotees complain, why like this? Why like that? Why like this? Why like that? I'm feeling fried out. What is the difference? Why someone leaves with less faith and someone leaves with more faith? It's our willingness to receive the mercy. It's our willingness to really want to make spiritual advancement at every moment, no matter what happens. Huh? Our willingness to really merge our consciousness in Krishna's grace as it's presenting itself before me in the association of all these wonderful devotees. In our willingness not to want to enjoy, but want to serve the satsang of Vaishnavas. To that extent that you're really taking part and making sacrifice in the mood of service, that you're going to be really revitalized and spiritualized in such a yatra. But then when we leave here, we should know that we're going into an atmosphere where there is association that's going to create doubt and material desires in our mind. Therefore, we must regularly associate with devotees. In our congregation, we insist that every devotee must come to Radha Gopinath's temple to be with the other Vaishnavas, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, to see the beautiful form of Sri Radha Gopinathji, to chant and dance in the beautiful Sankirtan of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu every Sunday. Minimum. If possible, every day. But at least every Sunday. Give one full day of your life every week only to be with the devotees, chanting, dancing, hearing, and feasting. That will keep the flame of your spiritual desire burning bright in your heart. It's so important. And every single day, you should sit down and exclusively dedicate whatever time it takes to chant 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And every single day of your life you must dedicate to giving some time to sitting and reading Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or Chaitanya Charitamrita with the purports of the great acharyas. If you simply follow these simple processes and regularly come on these yatras, it will keep in the forefront of your life the burning light of spiritual desire. And that is what is required. And it is through that association and through that sadhana that we build determination and character. And ultimately, it is through that humble and sincere effort that we please Krishna and we please Guru. And by Krishna's grace, He can reveal everything to you. And He will reveal everything to you. He will rescue you from this ocean of birth and death. But we have to reach our hands out to Him to receive His mercy. And what we have just spoken is what Guru Maharaj and all the previous acharyas have instructed us of how to reach out to Krishna's mercy. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati used to say, first deserve, then desire. What this essentially means is do not take Krishna consciousness cheaply. It's the most valuable, precious jewel in all of creation. Every aspect of Krishna consciousness, we should never take it cheaply. We should prize and cherish the association of devotees, the chance to chant our japa, the chance to follow the instructions of our spiritual master. Don't worry about the maya in your mind. Don't worry about your restless material desires harassing you. Don't worry about all the doubts that filling your heart. It's natural. That's the condition you're in. If you're diseased, why complain about the symptoms? It's there. But you can do something. You can take the medicine strictly. It's a fact. We have doubts. We have lust. We have envy. We have anger. We have pride. We have greed. We have all these things. You can't ignore it. It's there. And it's always trying to disturb our spiritual lives. What can we do about it? tolerate it. Let it be. But take the medicine strictly, staunchly. That's what you can do about it. Sadhu Satsang and Harinam. That is the medicine Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya has given us to cure all the diseases within our hearts.
Radhanath Marsh, this is in reference to the first question asked of you. I once heard in a lecture that because of this age of Kali Yuga, we have so many impure thoughts and offensive thoughts running through our minds that it's actually not the thoughts that are, we're not held accountable for all of our thoughts, but if we act upon them. So could you elaborate upon this, please?
What is that saying of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati? Nonsense talk breeds nonsense thoughts, which breed nonsense actions, which breed the repetition of birth, old age, disease, and death. Dhyayato vishayan pung sang sangam sangat jayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha bhajayate krodhat bhavati samohat samohat smriti vibramar. Krishna says in Gita that when you contemplate the objects of the senses, it creates attachment. From that attachment, lust. From that lust, when it is unfulfilled, anger. From that, the memory is bewildered, the intelligence is lost, and then we will undoubtedly act sinfully. It is true. In previous ages, you are karmically responsible for everything you think. But in the age of Kali Yuga, people's minds are so uncontrolled that Krishna has given us a special concession that you're not karmically responsible for what you think. But you have the responsibility to control your thoughts. Because if you do not control your mind, you will be driven by those thoughts to speak and act sinfully. And then you are karmically responsible. So if at the very beginning we don't strive to curb those wicked thoughts or those impure thoughts in our mind, we will undoubtedly speak and act according to them. And although we may not be karmically responsible, ultimately we are if we are not sincere to control them. And even though we may not be karmically responsible, still those thoughts are creating vibrations which affect everyone. Yoga means to control the mind. In fact, Krishna says when you control the mind, the supersoul is automatically attained. So, we should not be cheaters. We should not behave in such a way to appear like something when inside we're not even endeavoring to really be that. Some people say, why should I act like a nice devotee when I'm thinking all terrible things? If you just justify it and continue thinking those terrible things without endeavoring to purify your mind, then you are a cheater. You are a pretender. But if while acting the way you should, and honestly and sincerely endeavoring through good sadhana, through nice association, and through your own willpower and determination, which is developed through those associations, that you are honestly trying to live up to what you are appearing to be, then you are a first-class devotee. And Krishna will help you overcome all obstacles, undoubtedly. we must be endeavoring. Srila Prabhupada told us that you are, because you're all following the four regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds and engaging all day long in devotional activities, you're already liberated. You're acting on the liberated state. But it's through our sadhana and our satsang and our determination that we actually realize our liberated condition. You've been given everything. Sincerity means internally, within our own minds and within our own hearts, we are really willing to struggle to keep Krishna in our mind, to keep sinful thoughts out of our mind. It's a fight. It's a struggle. And it's that battle. It's that battle that Krishna has told Arjuna to fight in Bhagavad Gita. After all, as far as killing the Kurus, killing all the soldiers on the battlefield, Krishna could have spoken one sloka of Bhagavad Gita and Arjuna would have done it. Krishna could have just said, Arjuna, I'm your guru, you go and you fight against Drona, Duryodhana, Bhishma, and all those others, Karna. Why did he speak over 700 verses? None of the 700 verses really have anything to do with fighting against Duryodhana's army. The whole Bhagavad Gita was to teach us how to fight the enemies within our own heart. Are they not? And then to act according to that realization. So this is what sincerity means. We must be determined to say no to Maya whenever she appears in our mind, and to say yes to Guru and Krishna whenever they appear in our mind. And there's a battle to say no to Maya. And it's that battle that will make us glorious. To be willing to struggle that battle. You cannot win, but if you're willing to struggle, and how do you struggle? By taking shelter of Krishna. Not by just trying to vacate sinful thoughts from your mind, but simultaneously trying to fill it with Krishna. By keeping 24 hours a day, as much as possible, engaged in devotional service. And the most expedient process of devotional service to keep our minds with Krishna is to chant his holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. If we are sincere in this way, Krishna will help us. God helps those who help themselves. Just be humble, be sincere. Strike, fight, struggle, and chant Hare Krishna. Yes.
Maharaj, in the morning lecture, you mentioned the beautiful story of Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas. He renounced everything just to so that he can spread Krishna consciousness. He did that for us. But now when in our life, when Krishna takes away something very dear to us, or he does something which we don't like, we complain. So how we can become sincere and we don't complain and be always grateful to him for whatever mercy he is giving to us.
Devo.
Thank you for this nice question. The first step is to associate with people who are sincere. We become what we associate with. If we are associating with people who are sincere, then they will continuously remind us of what a wonderful fortune Krishna is giving us at every moment. If we are associating with those who are sincere, we will be continuously reminded that even the obstacles and the tragedies in our life are Krishna's kind love which is only meant to draw us closer to Him. But if we associate with people who are complaining, even if they are devotees, and we're associating with people who are ungrateful, even if they may be devotees, they will drag our consciousness down. And we will complain, and we will criticize, and we will find faults, and we will have doubts. So when you're in a crisis in life, you need to seek shelter of devotees who can give you confidence, courage, and spiritual strength. And at the same time, through all these difficulties, you have to maintain very sincere and dedicated sadhana. This will keep you strong through the various storms that will come into your life in the material world. Today, during the prasad, Akrura Prabhu and Vishwarup Prabhu were reading the beautiful story in Krishna book where Shukadev Goswami and Srila Prabhupada answered your very question. Were you listening? No? That is why during prasad we should be silent. All our questions will be answered. Maharaj Parikshit asked Shukadev Goswami, why? In fact, after prasad, I couldn't leave the prasadam room. It was such an incredible story Prabhupada was telling. He was asking, why is it that devotees of demigods, such as Lord Shiva, they're so wealthy, they're so affluent, they're often so powerful and opulent. Although Lord Shiva, he lives on a mountain called Kailash. He doesn't have a home. He doesn't have a house he lives in. He doesn't wear any nice clothes or any jewelry. He wears skulls and snakes and tree bark or deer skin. He has nothing. And yet his devotees appear to be so materially successful and opulent and wealthy. And Lord Vishnu, he has beautiful golden crown, and he lives in the palaces of Vaikuntha. And he has wonderful necklaces and jewelry, and he's surrounded by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. And yet his devotees seem to be bereft of everything, and often beggars who not only get what they want, but they sometimes lose everything they have. Can you explain to me this apparent contradiction? And Shukadev Goswami said, because Krishna is supremely merciful. And Prabhupada was explaining the words of Shukadev Goswami, that when devotees of the Lord who are sincerely surrendering to the Lord, when everything goes their way, even if they become opulent, it's not due to some pious activity. It's because Krishna wants them to use that opulence in his service. It's not material, because the devotees are on the transcendental platform. And if they don't use that opulence in Krishna's service, but they start thinking, I am the enjoyer, it becomes an impediment to their spiritual life. So Krishna, because he's supremely independent in his loving exchanges with his devotees, sometimes he takes everything away. Sometimes he takes all your wealth away. Sometimes he'll even take your family members away. Sometimes he'll make your friends turn against you and hate you. Why? Because he loves you. Because this is what is required for you to helplessly, like a beggar on your hands and knees, pray to Krishna, save me, you're all that I have. And in this mood to chant the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavat, there is a story of the Brahmin from Avantadesh. This is a very significant story. I'll tell you why. Today we explained, as you so kindly reminded us, of the beautiful sannyas lila of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How he left everything in the service of humanity and accepted the vow of sannyas. According to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, do you know what one of the first things he did after he accepted the initiation of sannyas? He began to chant a particular sloka which was chanted by this Brahmin from Avantadesh. In fact, in the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, every devotee that takes sannyas is not only given a secret sannyas mantra, but he's also told to chant every day after the Gayatri mantra, three times, these prayers of the Brahmin of Avantadesh. Why? Because it was Mahaprabhu's meditation when he took sannyas. Now, what is the story that so much invoked such devotion in Lord Chaitanya's heart? The Brahmin from Avantadesh was very wealthy, very powerful, very influential, but material nature is usually, the more you have these things, the more you become egoistic, cruel to others, and fallen. Even Srila Prabhupada, quoting Vishwanath Chakravarti and other acharyas, they say that material opulence and affluence is a great enemy for those on the spiritual path, because they make us proud. And when we become proud, we commit offenses to others. The great acharyas say, association with money and the opposite sex are the greatest stumbling blocks for self-realization. And even great stalwarts on the path of bhakti have fallen down to practically nothing due to the influence of this. Too much wealth or illicit connections on a sexual basis. So, and usually one thing leads to the other. This is the warning of all the acharyas. Of course, Srila Prabhupada had a nice cook like Malati Swami. And after his movement was going on, he was gaining millions and millions of dollars. I remember when we were in Chaupati and Prabhupada was giving this pandal. At one time he was telling all the Indians that I went to America with nothing and now we're making so many, I don't remember how many, now I have gotten reports through our book distribution, so many lakhs of rupees every day. Huh? 40 lakhs of rupees every day, he said, according to Chandramali Maharaj. But he used everything for Krishna. He engaged everyone, and he was always the servant of all of his disciples, engaging him in Krishna's service. So money and association with anything never disturbed his mind. Rather, Krishna gave him all that opulence, and because he used it all selflessly for the betterment of other human beings and the glory of Krishna, Krishna just gave him more and more and more, and the more he got, the more glorious and glorious Krishna made him appear to the world. But the tendency is, when we have these things, we start to think, it's mine. We start to think, just see what I have done. And we become proud. Our attitude of service. And we start thinking, I'm the enjoyer, and I'm the controller. And then we start being cruel to others. We think we have the right to manipulate other people according to our whims. So this was the condition of this Brahman from Avanti Desh. A Brahman is one who's supposed to have all virtuous good qualities. But he was always speaking harsh words. He was cruel to his friends, he was cruel to his family members, but there was nothing any of them can do about it because he had the money and he had the power. So they were all obliged to just go along with him and say nice things about him, although in their hearts they resented him. But then what happened is, by the grace of God, thieves stole everything he had. Fires came and burned all of his property. Within one day, he had nothing. All of his power and influence, all of his money was gone. And all of his family members and all of his so-called friends and associates who were simply using him for their own selfish purposes, they wanted nothing to do with this rascal anymore. They spit on him. His family members rebuked him, chastised him, condemned him, and left him. And his friends had no time for him. He was useless. He was laying on the ground, a completely broken man, in total desperation and anxiety. He was suffering beyond our imagination. And he was weeping. And in that suffering condition, he began to chant that beautiful sloka. The essence of that sloka is, my dear Lord, I'm going to now follow in the footsteps of all the great souls of the past, and I'm going to surrender to you, who is the Lord of my heart, as my only refuge in life. And when he turned to Krishna, like a humble beggar with nothing, in utter desperation, at that very moment of chanting this prayer, he became enlightened. Krishna reciprocated and gave him pure devotional service. And then he became completely ecstatic. He was no longer repenting over losing his family members or his wealth or anything. He was ecstatic. He had Krishna. He had love of Krishna. But it took everything being taken away to humble that person to beg for the Lord's mercy. When you can beg for the Lord's mercy, like he did, you'll become a pure devotee at that moment. But why does Krishna have to do all that to us to bring us to that point? Why don't we willingly strive to be pure and beg for Krishna's mercy, and more than that, beg for the mercy of his devotees now in our present situation? And if Krishna gives us something wonderful, it's not yours. Use it for Krishna. Don't keep it for yourself. If you keep it for yourself, it will become like a heavy weight which will make you sink deeper and deeper in your material illusions. Whatever you get, give it to Krishna. Use it for Krishna. This doesn't mean we have to give away our home. You see this beautiful bungalow of Sri Dayananda Prabhu. If he was using this for his own sense gratification, this is a huge, heavy weight. But he simply invites all the devotees to come, to chant, to dance, to feast, and he's just running around serving all the devotees with Radha Priya. We're just here enjoying, but they're making all the arrangements, they're spending all the money, they're simply, in the most menial way, keeping completely in the background, just giving this to us for Krishna's glorification. There's no harm in having great wealth or affluence or even property if it's used under the guidance of our spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. Then those opulences actually become pleasing to Krishna, because of the heart in which we are offering them as a humble service to the devotees. But if you keep anything for yourself and try to separate it from Krishna, it's going to cause great, great impediment. And ultimately, Krishna knows what we need. We know what we want, but Krishna knows what we need. You do not know what you need, because as far as our minds are concerned, our wants and our needs are all mixed up. It's very confusing. It's called the mental platform. We think, I need this, but actually, you think you need it because you want it. And when the spiritual master says, give it up, we think, but I need it. But at that point, you should know, you don't need it, you want it. But Krishna wants you to give it up. And sometimes, just through the course of our life, Krishna takes things away that we think we need. Why? Because Krishna wants you to know that he is your only real father, your only real mother, your only real friend, your only real well-wisher is Krishna. And we must beg him. We must plead with him, Krishna, I'm yours. Save me. So if you understand this, then you can take every condition of life as his mercy. In fact, Lord Brahma, the original spiritual master of this universe, prayed in this way. Tate nukampam sushumikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vibhagam ridvagva purvir vidadam namaste jivetaya mukti pade sadaya bhak. And this was one of Srila Prabhupada's favorite verses. When one of our god brothers, Hayagriva Maharaj, when he was given the notice that he had cancer and that he would die within 6 months, and he was racked with pain, unbearable pain, and he couldn't walk, he was bedridden, suffering, he was telling me that this is Prabhupada and Krishna's mercy. They are reclaiming me. And I brought him this verse, because Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse so often. In almost every one of his books, you'll find this verse, because it's so relevant to everyone's life. The translation of this verse is, one who is put in the most terrible conditions of suffering, and in that state, folds his palms with great humility and offers obeisances to Krishna with a grateful heart, that person alone can achieve the perfection of liberation. No one else. So every time a calamity is put into our life, we should understand that Krishna is giving me the chance to make the most spiritual advancement by just folding our palms and saying, Krishna, thank you. I'm your devotee. You can do anything you want to me. Maro bira kobi jo icha tohar nitya dasa prati tua adhikara. My Lord, if you want, you can protect me. Or if you want, you can annihilate me. You can kill me. You can take away everything. You have a right to do anything you please with me, because I'm your servant unconditionally. This is the prayer of the great Vaishnavas. Of course, we know this, but the nature of the conditioned soul is forgetfulness. You have heard this so many times before, but we forget. The nature of Kali Yuga is to forget. Krishna consciousness means the continuous process of remembering. Therefore, we require regular association with sincere devotees who are striving to live according to these principles. Why? Because they will help us remember. And you, all of us, our service to other devotees is to help them remember by our example, by our words. Whether we consider ourselves advanced or not advanced, in this congregation, we can all humbly try to help each other remember that Krishna is perfect, that his mercy is perfect, and that come hell or high water, we need each other and we need his holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And if we have that regular remembrance by reading from Srila Prabhupada's books daily, by associating with devotees regularly, by chanting the holy names regularly, we will be again and again and again reminded, and we will not forget. Krishna's blessings come in many forms. One time I was speaking with Malati Swami, such a wonderful Vaishnav. We're so fortunate, so unlimitedly fortunate to have association of such a wonderful devotee, so dear to Srila Prabhupada. We were discussing some tremendous crisis in her life. And I said to her that I believe that this is Krishna's blessing in disguise. And she said to me, it is not in disguise. It is simply Krishna's blessing. Adio! So you see, we need each other to help remind each other that Krishna's blessings are not in disguise, but they are really his blessings. Hari Om.
Maharaj?
Yes? Me again?
Well, I don't know if this question can possibly
I'm always here. Well, of course, you're always in America.
I would like to ask Nav Maharaj this question. So we were hearing this morning that Lord Chaitanya made such great sacrifice. He shaved up, took sannyas to distribute the mercy of Krishna. Whereas Lord Nityananda, he was opening up the marketplace for the holy name and freely distributing it just for the cost of one's faith. So both Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya are spreading the mercy. What is the difference between their mercy?
I'm not very qualified to answer your questions, but I'll try to. Lord Nityananda, he accepted the position of the servant and he obeyed the instruction of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, because of the situation at that time, what was going on, he felt that by his taking his sannyas, his mission will become more successful. People will accept him more, because at that time, people had a lot of respect for sannyasis, sadhus. So he felt that. Also, if they just offer obeisance by seeing a sadhu, they will make advancement. So with this kind of thought, Lord Chaitanya accepted this sannyas. But then later on, Lord Nityananda, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed him to go and give the holy name to each and every village, each and every house, and go and preach and give out the holy name. And Lord Nityananda, he accepted that as his mission, and he went out and gave the holy names. So approach was a little different in both cases. In one, he was simply obeying. In the other one, he was thinking how people can be delivered from these sinful reactions. What should I do that people can be delivered in the thought? That was the difference in the thought. I don't know. Maharaj can. Radhanath Maharaj can give better explanation for that. I am not the right candidate for answering that question.
Very nice explanation. You should know that Lord Nityananda Prabhu, he was a completely renounced soul. He was living. He didn't formally take sannyas, but he was living as a sannyasi from his very birth. He was traveling to all the holy places. He was completely detached. He never owned anything. In fact, he was called upon by the name Avadhuta. Avadhuta means someone who's just completely detached from everything of this material existence. And when he came to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when they first met at the house of Nandanacharya, it's a beautiful story. But the ecstasy of the love of these two brothers, Krishna and Balaram, reuniting in this age of Kali Yuga to together distribute the mercy of this Harinam Sankirtan. So wonderful. So Nityananda Prabhu, he was simply in every way, shape, or form, the servant of Mahaprabhu. He's none different than Balaram. He's none different than Anantoshesha. What is Balaram's position in Goloka? He becomes the planet of Goloka. He expands himself as the Lord's clothes, as his crown, as everything, just to serve. Balaramji's only inclination eternally is only to please, to serve, and to facilitate Lord Krishna. In Vaikuntha, Anantashesha, he becomes Lord Vishnu's bed. He becomes his throne. He becomes his slippers. All of his paraphernalia is expansions of Anantashesha. This is And Lakshman, we read about in Ram's Leela, did he want anything for himself? Lakshman was simply the servant of Ram. Ram goes to the forest. I don't care about this kingdom of Ayodhya. I will just go to the forest to protect Sita and Ram. He didn't even sleep at night. He stayed awake, just guarding Sita and Ram while they soundly and pleasingly slept. His whole life had nothing except the service to Ramchandra. It was the same personality who incarnated as Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And his all in life was simply to please Lord Gauranga. And he knew better than anyone what pleases Lord Gauranga. And that is to give the holy name of Krishna to everyone, to give love of Krishna to all of his parts and parcels, wasting their existence in this material world. So it was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who in Jagannath Puri, sitting in a solitary place, instructed Lord Nityananda Prabhu that you, in order to facilitate this wonderful preaching mission of Harinam Sankirtan, I want you to get married. I want you to become a grihastha. I have taken sannyas for the purpose of reaching a certain sector of society. But you must marry in order to reach other sectors of society. And they worked hand in hand. Nitai Gauranga. You cannot separate Lord Chaitanya from Lord Nityananda. One was in grihastha ashram, one was sannyas ashram. It was all the will of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to reach every class of people by giving them the opportunity to perfect their lives by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. And without the slightest hesitation, Lord Nityananda Prabhu accepted the order of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And he went to Ambika Kalna, and there he approached Suryadas Sarakela, the elder brother of Gauridas Pandit, and he asked for the hand of his daughters in marriage. And then they moved to a village called Karadaha, and there Lord Nityananda Prabhu resided with Janava Devi and Vishuddha Devi. Janava Devi, Nityananda Prabhu gave her no children, but she adopted one great Vaishnava as a child. And Vishuddha, Nityananda Prabhu gave her two children. One was Birchandra Prabhu, and the other, he was a son and a daughter named Ganga Devi. In this way, Lord Nityananda Prabhu used this facility of the Grihastha Ashram to expand the glories of the holy name. And what he did was inconceivable. He would travel to every town and to every village, and he would induce everyone to chant the holy names. And he would go anywhere. Lord Nityananda was spoken of by Lord Chaitanya that even if Nityananda Prabhu is gone, is seen going into a house of prostitution or a house of alcohol and liquor, no one should dare even imagine or think that he's doing anything wrong. You should know for sure he's going there to spread the glories of the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. He was absolutely spotless in his behavior. Nityananda Prabhu, he literally converted millions and millions and millions and millions of beings into pure devotees of the Lord. And his son, Birbhadracharya, became one of the greatest stalwart acharyas in our line. And his consort, Janavi Devi, became the leading acharya of all Gaudiya Vaishnavas worldwide after Nityananda Prabhu left this world. What type of grihastha ashram was that? So you asked, what is the difference between the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and the mercy of Lord Nityananda? There is no difference. It is the same mercy. Just being distributed to everyone. Without discrimination.